Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2018. Lecture 7, delivered on February 7, 2018. The title of this lecture is Annuities and Perpetuities.
Tonight, Annuities and Perpetuities. Let me begin by just continuing to expose you to the screens to give you the sense of markets and what they're doing and all of that, and to deepen your understanding. Of the world of finance. So I'm going to go to the primary screen on Yahoo Finance. And we'll look at what happened today. Okay. Madam, good day, bad day, meh day?
For myself?
For this. No, no. Let me turn on the... I forgot to turn on the... Well, actually, yeah, you know, but don't get into anything weird, you know. If you got abducted by aliens, I'm not interested. That's just weird stuff. So as the screen comes up, what I want you to do... Why does it take that screen so long? I can turn on a light bulb and it turns on right away. And this thing is just staring at me dead. Is that actually on? I don't think the projector is actually firing. Oh, there it is. Okay, good, good. Okay, let me turn down the lights. Okay, madam, have a look at the markets today. Good day, bad day, what do you see? Or just a meh day? It was, you know, kind of bad. It was mostly just kind of a meh. We had two slaughter days, 666 and then 1100, something like that. And then we had a rally. The bulls were pulling bargains. And now we're seeing the other side, a skid of about 0.5% in the Standard & Poor's. That's nothing really exciting. I'm not too worried about something like that. Not much at all on the Dow, but the NASDAQ took a harder hit. So notice that this day was harder on the small caps, and the larger the companies, the less damage this day created. Although the Russell was just kind of just sitting there flat on its back. But there you go. We see that there is not a lot of movement, but it was enough to keep you on your toes that there is not some, that was not a glitch. Now, I'm going to show you something here and tell you a bit of a story that has to do with you as a personal investor. You see, if you are going to create a responsible portfolio, you're not going to buy one or two stocks. You're going to buy enough stocks to shake away the peculiar risk in each individual stock, because you will not get any reward for bearing unsystematic risk. The only reward you should expect is the reward that comes in a well-diversified portfolio where the stock's peculiarities and movements are canceling each other out. The problem with that is that if a well-diversified portfolio should have probably about 30 stocks in it, remembering that you should buy about a round lot of each one, that's an expensive endeavor. And then you have to keep an eye on it to keep it balanced and all of that. So the idea that you as an individual investor can buy and sell your own stocks and have a well-diversified portfolio, that's not likely to be the case. You can't do it. A normal person with normal amounts of money is just not going to be able to accomplish that, realistically. That's the Wall Street boys that do that kind of stuff. Now, does that mean that you can't have a well-diversified portfolio? Absolutely not. You can. There are a couple of ways that you can do it. One of them, what you do is you go with index funds. In other words, instruments, securities that are actually the composite of a portfolio of securities. Now, one way you can do this is through what are called mutual funds. Another way you can do it is through what are called ETFs, index ETFs. Now, an ETF is a stock, but that stock, when you buy it, you own a piece of a huge index. I'm going to show you one here. This is an ETF, an electronically traded fund, that is the Standard & Poor's 500. In other words, you buy a share of this stock, you have bought a share of a highly diversified portfolio, the Standard & Poor's 500. Now, this one's the SPYDR, S-P-Y-D-R, SPYDR. We call it the SPYDR. This is Standard & Poor's 500. There you go, look. It is the Standard & Poor's 500. It has this now, this is a $267.67 per share stock. So buy a round lot of this is kind of a rich endeavor in itself. What would that be? $26,767 plus commissions and all that. But nevertheless, the bottom line is that here's your well-diversified portfolio sitting right there in a single stock. Now notice, of course, this thing has all of the normal attributes. Interestingly, they're not reporting the beta. Oh, I gotta back this thing down. They stick those stupid screens that they think everyone wants. Really? Okay. They don't report a beta on. Oh, the beta is exactly one. This is the market portfolio's behavior. So if you wanted to just take the market risk, instead of buying every stock in the world and putting it in a portfolio in proportion to its contribution to the market cap of the world, you could buy a SPYDR and you've got the market risk and the expected return to the market right there in one animal. Okay, so that's the way you would do it. Now, there are other ones that are indexes for other stocks. There are ones that are for bonds, and there are mutual funds that do these tricks too. They are managed by professionals, Wall Street people, and they are balanced constantly. They keep their eye on it for you, and what you do as the investor is you just simply invest your money and let the pros who are right there on the street do the legwork for you in handling it. Just as a quick trick here, I want to make a quick point. This was the day. You notice that as this day went on, the Standard & Poor's 500, essentially a very good proxy for the market portfolio, the bulls were fighting their way upward through the day. Do you see that early in the morning? And then the bears started slapping them. And as the day proceeded, there were a couple of rallies. The bulls tried to grab a couple of times, and the bears slapped them down. Finally, there was one last rally. The bulls finally got a hold, bought some bargains. But then look at that at the end of the day. That was a steep sell-off right there. So that sets us up. Now, you have to look at the overnight trading in the futures markets on these stocks, on the stocks and the indexes. But realistically, it's setting up for another dark day tomorrow. That doesn't mean it will be a bad day. If I knew that for sure, I wouldn't be teaching. I would just be investing. But the good money is that right now, it looks like the bears have asserted themselves once again, and we are truly in the first phases of a bear market. There will be up days.
And there will be down days, but there will be more hard down days than up days as we drift toward recession. Okay? So that should excite you for your employment prospects down the road, or not. Now let me show you a trick. Now this is not strong investment advice, but here's how we usually recommend that if you want to do your own investments, first of all, don't do individual stocks or bonds. You buy into these indexes. By the way, a dirty secret. I'll tell you something from a couple of years ago, back when I was one of the advisors to the official finance club. Now I'm an advisor to my own finance and economics club. But back then, we have these speakers come in and tell us about their work in finance. And inevitably, we would have these people come in who were investment types, financial planners, wealth managers, and they would talk about all their work watching stocks and bonds and buying and selling and all that, and that's how they earn their commissions. Boy, is that hard work. Bull crap. They were indexers. Almost all of them that are not on Wall Street are indexers. In other words, they just buy index portfolios, and then they tweak them back and forth a little bit to make it look like they're doing a lot of work. But all they do is buy the indexes because they can't do better than these highly diversified, professionally managed portfolios on the street. So if you have these people talk to you about, boy, there's a lot of backroom work and we do a lot of calculations, and if you think there are a lot of jobs for financial analysts in the back room of these places, no, there isn't. You're indexing. It doesn't take too many people to index, especially with artificial intelligence systems. So don't be impressed by these people who talk about how much they buy and sell to keep their portfolio balanced for all of their precious clients. Horse crap, they're indexers, just like I would be these days. I wouldn't even try. I can get an index for anything I want. Now, let me tell you something about responsible investment. First of all, use mutual funds and ETFs. The second thing is that you should have a portfolio of portfolios. So in other words, I would put it like this. You're going to have an equity index, an equity ETF or an equity mutual fund that's well balanced, performs well, and all that. You're also going to have a bond index. A lot of those are mutual funds. They invest in bonds, corporate bonds. And then you're going to have a cash position. Now, when we say cash, in our world, we don't mean dollars. We mean a portfolio of extremely low-risk instruments. That would be probably a portfolio of short-term treasury bills. Short-term treasuries have no risk. They don't yield much, and you can turn them into money real fast. As a matter of fact, if you go with some brokers, they'll even give you these things that are sort of like checks that you can write against your cash position. They're not real checks. They're negotiable order of withdrawal type things. But we call it cash, but it's really just highly, highly liquid, very low risk stuff, securities. Now, you set up three states of the world. Now you can do 5, 20, whatever you want. I do 3 because there's not much payoff to doing more. You have a boom economy. And you have a bust economy. And you have an economy in the middle that's sort of like a meh. Now, when the economy is in a boom, your portfolio of portfolios would probably look something like this. 70% equity, 15% bonds, and 5% cash. You're heavily leaning toward the aggressive. You keep some money in the bond fund, and you always have a cash fund, because essentially when you sell in the other two categories, you've got to have the money go somewhere, and that will go to the cash fund. So you have that cash position. Okay, I want to pull 5% out of equity, put into cash until I decide what I'm going to do here, kind of thing. Okay, now in this meh economy, I'm probably going to stand at about 50% equity, 40% bonds, and then in the cash, I will up it to 10%. Do you see how I'm leaning, rebalancing my portfolio? And then if I am seeing that we are going to go into a recession, then I'm probably going to pull back to about 30% equity, 65% bonds, and then 15% cash. You notice that I'm not going crazy with these things. And I would not do this all the time. I would use my sense. You're getting an education as professionals. You know more than most people. You can tell an economy is going bad, or you can tell when an economy is going good. You don't listen to the experts on TV and all their nonsense crap. You don't let your politics get in the way of your investments. You think for yourself about this. Okay, I am seeing the signs of a weakening economy. So once I have, you don't wait too long, but you also don't jump like a rabbit. Okay, it looks like we're beginning to slide here. I'm going to probably move from the boom into the middle ground and hold on for a little bit there and see what happens. See if we pull out. Okay, if we're not going to pull out, then I'm just going to get all kinds of excited here, and I'm going to pull back to the full defensive position here. Now, if you really think this is going to be a bad one, you might even tilt it a little more. And your percentages, these are just examples. This is what I would do. But yours, you will have to make your assessments for yourself. Are you more of a risk taker? Then you probably wouldn't go full down into 30% on the equities. You'd stay a little higher. If you're a very skittish person, more risk averse, you might go to 20% equity and 75% bonds in your portfolio. The bottom line, though, is that you notice there's never a zero on any of these. That's not how you do things responsibly. You don't just cut something off. You just move your portfolio. And like I said, you don't do it all the time. You do it, okay, you do it with the economy, but there's also this thing when you realize that you're going through a change in your life. So, for example, when you're single, you might have 80% or maybe 75% equity and 10% bond. And then if you become involved in a relationship, especially if you start to plan for children, you might want to pull back a little bit, lay off your aggressive, because you have to be responsible for other people. You might move more quickly at a time in your life later when a loss would be more damaging to your retirement. So you might move, maybe even go from boom to bust if it's really concerns you and you're 50 years old and you want to retire in 10 years. So it has to be tailored not just to your individual preferences, but to the place you are in your life and the lives of the people around you. That's how you do responsible investment. And I want to emphasize that in a class like this. Don't let your politics get in your way. Don't also let these experts on Financial News Network and all the Wall Street Journal and all that get in your way. They have their own biases, and they also quite frequently have paymasters behind the scenes that are helping them make recommendations to you. And especially if you ever hear one of those stock experts recommend that you buy a specific stock, shut off the damn television, because he's telling you to do something that is absolutely irresponsible. Individual stock investment is the way to ruin. You think you're a genius in an upmarket? Watch what happens when you have an unbalanced portfolio with exposure to massive amounts of non-systematic volatility. You will be cleaned out doing that kind of stuff. So there's your advice from an old bitch like me. Okay. Moving away from that a little bit, the topic of tonight's lecture is annuities and perpetuities. Now, a couple of things. One is that I assume that you all were in an accounting class where you use tables at the back of your accounting book for the factors. Am I right about that?
You flip, yeah. We are in the 20th century. We may have actually made it to the 21st century. They are still in the 19th century doing that. It's a waste of time. It's inefficient. It will do you no good in my class because you won't have tables. I have you do it on calculators. It's faster. It's cleaner. You're less likely to make a mathematical mistake, although Lord knows I do anyway. I try to. But that's the first thing. We use the calculators. Another thing, and I'll also be using a TI-83 plus. Anything TI-83 plus, 84, there's 84 plus. There's also something called the TI Inspire. Really cool. It's like a super TI-80 X calculator. Texas Instruments some years ago piloted this super calculator. It's like a giant, a big fat version of the 83, 84. And didn't come out, it wasn't very popular, so a whole pile of them ended up on eBay. I got one for $30. It's an awesome calculator. If you don't have a TI, you can buy one at the store, or you can go over to one of these stores in town, like Mega Replay. They've got tons of them over there usually. When students finish their finance courses, they, if they're not majoring in finance, they unload them. We'll use one of those calculators in this class to show you the examples. I'm going to do it on calculators. Now, if you want, there are a few things that are better to do with a math formula, but for the most part, the calculator is going to do a lot faster for you. The hard part is not the math. The math is actually just math. As I was a teacher for many years at Ohio State and other places as a math teacher, I found that a lot of students said, well, doing the math isn't the hard part. It's setting up the problem that's the hard part. True enough. So I'm going to show you the way we set up the problems, or at least the way I do. It's an old way, but it helps. But in a lot of circumstances, I don't show you the formulas and the theories up front. I show you problems and show you how to do them. I think it works a lot better that way if we just take a couple of problems on a calculator and attack them on the calculator. Now, first things first, when I say annuity, annuity is a stream of payments. That's the best way. It's a cash flow. Now, the one I showed you last week, or rather on Monday, that was a lump sum, how to find a present value or a future value. So technically, I mean, one of those is just an annuity with one payment. Now, if I say, if typically we like to stay with level annuities. In other words, all of the payments in the cash flow are the same, a level annuity. Now, here's the one that you have to think about. When you see a problem, there is the ordinary annuity. Ordinary annuities have their payments in the cash flow occur at the end of each period. These are the ones that are most typical in most circumstances. However, the other one where the payments occur at the beginning of each period, those are called annuity due. Now, when you get a car loan, they don't want your first payment right away. They want it at the end of the month. So that would be an ordinary annuity. A home loan. Most loans, consumer loans, are ordinary annuities. Corporate bonds or the coupon payments are ordinary. Where you see the annuity due is most likely in some kind of a financial planning environment. Let me give you an example. You, sir, you've had a great time in college, and you finished up, and then you heard someone very important to you, said something that changed your life. I mean, this, everything changed. You went to a happy place.
someone very important to you said, I'm having your child. Yeah, when it happened to me, I didn't have any, so. But, so the birth comes and you feel daddy. I mean, daddy just fills you up. By golly, I'm going to go out and I'm going to put money into a savings account. So this child of mine, I'm that baby's daddy, I am going to put money into an account every year, the same amount, and until he's 17, and then let it ride for a year, and on his 18th birthday, I will give him that money that is in that account so that he can have a quality college education at Illinois State University. Okay, well, look, you got me, so it's obviously the best school around. Okay, so do you see that would be an annuity due because your first payment goes in immediately and then the last payment rides with the rest of it? That's an annuity due. Someone hit me with one. I said, can you think of any other? Someone hit me with one I had never thought of before. Rent. When you rent an apartment, they make you give your first payment up front. So that's actually an annuity due. It had never occurred to me. Yeah, there's one too. Okay, now, let's move on here. And I'm going to actually pull up a calculator. Like I said, the best way I've found for people to learn is to do. The theory is absolutely crucial, but that's not how people learn. When you learn how to talk, you don't start asking questions about the subject, the predicate, and all that. You just start saying words. Unfortunately, my kids learned bad words very early on, but that was my mistake. Okay, no, I don't want to do that. Let me... documents. I'm going to pull up the TI-83 virtual here. First things first. If you're holding your calculator and look in the top right-hand corner, if you see a button that says no, that means your calculator is upside down. Really? That's my best one. And all you could do is, idiot. Yes. Oh well. Anyway, where the hell? Oh, here we go. Okay. Here's your TI-83. Now, We're going to clear it out here. Now, here's where you will live your lives. Now, sometimes you'll do a little bit of an algebraic formula, but for the most part, you'll go apps, and one is finance. And you have all of these nice finance calculating engines. The one we'll use quite frequently is TVM Solver. And you could use this one in your own life. And then there are some here so you can figure out your payments, how much you have left on a loan after a certain number of payments, how much interest you're paying at a certain payment, and how much is going towards the loan balance. And then you have some down here, net present value, we'll do later, internal rate of return. You've got a whole raft of them, and they save you having to crank formulas. But you do have to watch a couple of things. First of all, if you're doing math, percentages, you turn them into decimals. 6% is 0.06. But if you're using a financial calculator, you use the percentage, okay? And I am forever forgetting that. But anyway, the one we'll use frequently right off the bat is the TVM Solver. Now, N is the number of periods, the number of cash flow components. The I percent is the percentage per payment or per period. And we'll go through it here in a minute. But what we need to do is get down to a real life problem. Madam, you have gotten your degree here from this fine university, and you have decided that you are going to live your dream. You are going to become an assistant manager at a Jiffy Lube on the south side of Memphis. On the weekends, you do clown parties, and on the evenings, you do Elvis impersonations. Life is good, very good. You decide it's time for you to have a new car. So you go with something that is really, really impressive, like one of those, what are those Ford, those Miev's? Those are the tiny, what's that one that's like a box? The soul. I mean, what happens if you have an accident? Do you destroy your soul? I mean, that's real. Don't they recall for ugly? Really? I mean, but you decide you're going to go for all the bells and whistles on it. You're going to get an 8-track tape player in it. You don't even know what an 8-track, dear God. Okay. You're going to get one of those fuzzy steering wheels for it. And you're going to get the seats that have the extra layer of spray so that your friend who sits in the other seat won't make a mess after he's eaten White Castles. Okay, here. You decide, okay, I want to buy this car, and I'm going to go for $14,000. And I'm going to get an APR of 5.49%. And I'm going to get this one for 5 years. Here we go. Just make sure you do everything right. N. Okay, what do I put in for N? Madam? What do I put in? You don't know? 60. What? 60. Yeah, not 5, 60. Because there are 60 payments in 5 years. They're monthly payments. Sometimes you have to see something that they don't tell you directly in the problem. So here, by the way, one thing that you can always do is you can just say 5 times 12. Don't hit enter, just go down. See how it does it? Don't do the enter button. There's a reason. Sometimes that will cause you some grief. Now, the APR, 5.49. Again, remember with finance apps, you have to put in the percentage and then divided by 12. Again, don't forget to do that because these are the periodics. Now, PV here is the price value. One thing about financial calculators you've got to remember is that PVs always go in and come out as negatives. Don't ask me why. It's always been that weird way ever since financial calculators started showing up in the early 80s. So the price value, what you're going to get a loan for, is negative $14,000. Now, leave the payment alone. We're going to figure out what your payment is. FV, that is the future value. In a normal loan, there will not be a balloon payment at the end. So that's going to stay zero. Now, there are a couple of cases where you will have an FV. Like, for example, remember when I told you about bonds? You get your last coupon payment and then you get your $1,000. That's one place where you would do it. Another place where you might do it, are you familiar with car leases? A lot of leases, at the end, you have the option of buying the car for a certain price at the end of the lease. That would be where you would put in an FV there. Leave P over Y and the other one. Leave C over Y and P over Y alone. Just leave them at 1. Here's the place you have to watch. Make sure your toggle is on the right one. If it's an ordinary annuity, if the payments occur at the end of every period, you toggle on N. If the payments are at the beginning of the period, in other words, if it is an annuity due, you toggle on begin. So here we have it toggled on end. Now we go back up here and we put the cursor back on FV, and then you hit alpha and then solve, which is the enter button. Alpha solve. Well, spank me. There's your payment, $267.35 a month. There you go. You have now calculated a loan payment. You don't have to have someone else do it. You can do it.
Now, there's a practical side to this. There's a real practical side. Aside from the fact that now you can actually figure out, well, if I buy this, this will be my payments kind of thing. Here's the practical side of it. It would work like this. You go in to, you're going to buy a new car. Now, what you know is that a bank will make you a loan based upon your disposable income. Let's say that you have a disposable income. You figure your take-home paycheck minus your other bills leaves you with, let's say, about $1,600 per month. Okay, now the bank has a threshold. It's probably going to be 25% or 30%, something like that. They're going to say, we're not going to lend you any more than 25%. In other words, whatever payment, it cannot take more than a fourth of your disposable after, because you've got to eat and all that. So you have figured that the biggest payment you can make on a car loan would be $400 a month. Okay? Using the same percentage for a 5-year loan, we're going to now say, okay, let's put in $400. Whoa. This thing is so weird anymore. Okay, let's put in the $400. I have to do it. The keyboard here is just a mess. Okay, $400. Now, I'm going to go back up to PV, and I'm going to do, what price for a car? What loan could I get? Alpha? Solve. I can get a $20,946 car. Now, why would that be useful to you? Because you can walk into the dealership and you can say, well, I like this car. I cannot have the price be more than this. Period. That's it. If you can make this happen, great. If you can't, then I'll go to another dealership. Because I have calculated this is my threshold for the payment. It gives you a quantitative defense of negotiation for the car that you want to buy. Okay, the car is listing at $22,500. Okay, can you make it happen at $20,950? If you can, it'll work. If you can't, then the bank's going to turn me down. Don't worry about it. Oh, I do worry about the bank. I had a finance class with Professor C. Okay, maybe not. You won't say that. Okay, but do you see the usefulness of this? Because then you can say, all right, I'm going to set a limit on payments. Now, what loan can I get? That doesn't apply just to cars. It applies to homes and everything else that you're going to do in your life. So we go to another one. Ow. You, sir, decide that you want to live the dream. So you are going to get a double-wide trailer on the east side of Toledo. It's not the worst place in the world. The bowling, I mean, they got several bowling alleys and leagues. I've told you about that and all that. Yes. Okay, so you go out shopping and you find that you can get a double-wide trailer. Seems that your kids are kind of double-wide. You feed them too much, but, you know. And it has an extra lot beside it, so you can put up the cars that you've collected on cinder blocks in that extra lot. And that... Then you can dig a pit and have open pit barbecues with your brewski friends and all that for $110,000. Now the APR, let's say it's 6.99% on a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. So now we can figure out what the payments are going to be. Yes, we can. It's that easy to do with the calculator. Now, again, I could have shown you the formulas and the theory first. Look how easy it is. Okay, go up here. First things first, get to N. This is going to be 30 years, and again, this will be 12
payments a year. You always assume that for typical consumer loans unless you see something different. And then the I percent, you toggle down, and we're going to do 6.99. Whoops, I didn't mean to do that. 6.99 divided by 12. Again, don't forget, periodic interest. Now here we have our price value, in this case negative 110,000. This is an ordinary annuity, that's fine, no balloon payment at the end, so all we have to do is go down to payment, and we go alpha, solve, $731.09 a month. That's what your payments would be. Again, this is extraordinarily useful information for you as you plan your future out and all of that. And you can do all kinds of other calculations. I'm going to show you a couple where you do some backflips. Now, most of these aren't too hard, but take my word for it. Drawing timelines can be extraordinarily helpful in these kinds of problems because they help you visualize the model of what you have to do, present value, future value. So, for example, okay, let's do one. Again, we'll go to a scenario where you have decided that you want to fund your retirement. Put something so that it will be in the bank at the end of a certain number of years. So you figure that you want to retire at about the age of 62. So you're going to think to yourself, okay, I can afford to put $2,000 away every year. You have this resolution on New Year's Day. I'm going to put in $2,000. And by golly, I'm going to do that every year for the next 40 years. And then I'll let the amount ride out 1 year, and then I'll retire. Here's where it's going to help you to draw a timeline for a couple of reasons. Here's where you'll see me probably make a mistake on the number of years. Okay. So, here is year zero. And your timeline is going to take you out. Now, you're about 21. So, what we're going to do is we're going to put payments in here until you're 60. So, we're going to put into this account $2,000. Every year, 58, 59. Okay, we'll stop at 59. Because that would be 40 years, I think. I am terrible at the counting of those numbers. Okay. And then here at year 60, we're going to collect the amount. And we're going to put it into something, let's say that we can get it into an account that pays 4.2%. And that will allow us to see how much we would have at the end of this time. This is the very beginning of what we call financial planning. Helping people to know you put this amount in and you discipline yourself to do this all of the time. And this is what you will achieve as a goal at the end. So in this case, we've got 40 years. Notice that there's no times anything because these are annual payments. So there's no compounding thing happening. Now we go down. The I percent is going to be 4.2. Again, we don't divide here because this is just an annual thing. It's not monthly, it's just annual. We could do it monthly, but okay, now There is no first kicker. It's just that we don't start with anything. We just say, all right, the payments are going to be $2,000 each. Now, here's the important part. Is this an ordinary annuity or an annuity due? Yeah, it's a due because your first payment in happens immediately. So we have to take this down here. Now let's go up and see what the future value. What we'll have on your 60th birthday. You made your last payment 1 year before that. You write it out. Alpha, solve. You'll have $207,632 in the bank. Yeah. Say that again. It is compounded, but it's compounded annually. Okay, the compounding, there's actually no such thing as simple interest anymore, hardly ever. But the compoundings here are only once a year because essentially what happens with a bank is when you put in the new amount of money, then it recalculates the interest since you're doing it once a year. Yeah, go ahead.
Are you supposed to multiply by 12
for No, because it's only once a year that you're doing it. Yeah, that's the compounding is only once a year. And that's where you have to read the problem carefully and also think about it too. Okay, I said that this was going to go in once a year. So, in other words, the compoundings are all going to happen only once a year. Now, interestingly, there are some kinds of loans where they happen at a different kind of pace. For example, remember I told you that coupons on bonds actually pay semi-annually? So you would... If the bond has 20 years left, you would do 40, and the coupon would be divided by 2. So you got to watch the nuances of that in this. But here's an interesting thing is we've just gotten this thing done. We found out, and this is the start of financial planning. Now let me take you one step harder. This is where we have to think more carefully, and the timeline becomes a very important thing to work out. I'm trying to think who I could vex on this one. Madam, you are going to die someday. You knew that, right? I mentioned that to you before. I don't know if I did, but you will. I mean, the funny part about it is that you will probably live a long life. And you would like to live your golden years without having to work at Walmart. Can you imagine, when I'm finished here, it will be Walmart. You know, that's the greeter. Can you imagine that? I mean, it's bad. I was at a Walmart, and I mean, I walk in and I hear this voice from below me say, "Welcome to Walmart." And I look down, it's a midget. God. Oh, midgets. No, damn, they're hiring midgets now. Well, imagine me. Yeah, welcome to Walmart. Get the hell out of my way, you idiot. You're shopping at Walmart. Get. Beat you with my cane. Okay, no, you don't want to do that. You want to retire and live a life where you have put enough money in the bank on a disciplined, regular basis so that you can have $50,000 a year to live on. We can actually, this is more serious. This is getting closer to real financial planning. We can figure out what payments you would have to put in the bank every year so that you would, at the end, be able to let the last payment and all the payments before that ride out 1 year, and then you could retire and start pulling in $50,000 a year. Okay? This is where the timeline gets to be almost crucial on this. And after I've shown you this one, I'll tell you how to make it even more, how it's actually done. But, okay. So now, okay. We're going to set this up so that you make your first payment 1 year after you've gotten out of college. That way you will have built your income up and you can start to sustain the payments. So let's say that at the age of 23, that would be when you would make your first payment. That would be ground zero. And you want to ride those payments so that you make your last payment when you're 59 years old. And then at the age of 60, you have a block of money in the account that is sufficient to carry you until you are 80 years old. So if you live beyond that, then you're going to just live on the street. Okay. But, you know, 80, that's not bad. Yeah. For me, I mean, that's unrealistic, but that's just me. Okay, so. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm doing this incorrectly because what I would want is that you're at the age of 23, so we have to decide, okay, how many years are there going to be? You're going to make your first payment at the age of 23. How many payments would that be into the account going from 23, which is year zero, to 59, which is your terminal year? I cannot do that in my head for the life of me. I swear. Help me out here. 23, what did you say? 36? How do you do that? I mean, no, I'm not going. Anyway, okay, 36 payments. So what we'll do is the financial planner is going to work it out with a bank. Okay, they'll put the money in. They will not touch this money. They will not take any out. What can you do for me? Now, you see, there's our biggest problem is keeping that discipline. That money looks awfully tempting after about 10 years. I could have a real vacation or maybe a really super special car. So you got to keep them in the program because if they break this, it blows the whole calculation. And that's what happens sometimes. I had a financial planner tell me he had these people set beautifully. Going into year, they were a 47-year-old couple. And they went and bought a vacation home in Florida that was not in their financial plan. They were going to be dead. I mean, the home values, basically that house, by the time they retire, well, we could sell it. No, because no one sells ocean. That will be ocean by the time you... could you not? He just walked away from it. He broke the contract. He said, you violated the contract. I can't help you. Okay, anyway, okay, 36 payments. So the first thing that we want to do is we don't want to start here. What we want to start with is how much money would have to be here. How much money would have to be here in order to sustain $50,000 payments from this year right here, 60, until you were 80 years old. We need to know how much has to be here when you pull your first payment out in order for you to sustain those payments for the next, what would that be, 21, is that, no, 20 years? Is that right? 20 years. So what we first have to do is calculate the present value of $50,000 a year for 20 years to know how much our target is here. Now, it might take you a while to work this out. Lord knows it took me about 37 years to figure this all out. But what? Did you see that? This calculator turned off. Why?
Oh, save the battery.
No, seriously, noobs, did you see that? It turned the battery off. It turned the calculator off. The hell? Sorry. Just small things bother me. Okay. Okay, so what was the first part of it? How many years? 20 years, was it? Okay, 20 years. Well, this keyboard is just all messed up. Okay, so let's go up here. Okay, we've negotiated, but I forgot to finish that, what I was saying there. Suppose that we've worked it out that our investments can earn on a long-term basis under a set plan with the savings institution, with the financial institution, our investments, our money in and money out, can earn 3.5% APR. Okay? So we're going to put in the 3.5%. Now notice I'm not dividing it by anything because it's an annual thing that's going to happen. Now, how many years we wanted to live? 20 years? I keep forgetting the keyboard doesn't work here. 20 years. Wait a minute. I just, sorry. 3.5. Then toggle up. What is going on here? Is there some reason why this sucks? Yes. Okay. 3.5. And then we go up there. Now, this was for 20 years, and we're looking for the present value. See, we're bringing it back in time, present value. So the present value, we don't know, though. That's what we're going to have to find out. So we're going to be pulling $50,000 a year out of there. There's no future value because when we die, we don't want to leave anything. Your kids, they can go to hell. No, seriously. Are they going to care after you're dead? Are you going to care that they care after you're dead? No. I keep doing that. I can't use the keyboard here. Okay, the number pad. Okay, now, here's the thing. Is this an ordinary annuity, this back end, or is it an annuity due? Talk to me. I hear a few mumbles here. Yeah, it's an annuity due. Because you see, your first payment begins right at the shock front. You see it? You hit 60, and then you take your first payment out right away. So the payments begin at the beginnings of the periods, at the beginnings of the year. This is probably the hardest part to model in your mind, and it takes a while, and I still screw it up from time to time. Fortunately, I'm grading you. You're not grading me. Oh, sorry. That was insensitive. Okay, now, let's go back up, and let's see how much money has to be in that. Alpha, solve. Who? $735,491 and change. Ouch. Right there, the target is $735,491.87. It's almost trivial the pennies are in this. Okay, there you go. That's what has to be in there on your 60th birthday. You're going to put payments in at your 23rd birthday, 24th, etc., on through until you're 59 years old. And then you'll work your last year, and then at the end of that year, you'll pull your first $50,000 payment out of the bank. And you'll be able to do that every year for the next 20 years. So now we have to figure out what stream of payments will create that amount of money from year 23 for 36 years until you're 59, so that on your 60th birthday you have $735,491. That's what you have to do now. So it's not really that bad, because now we just go back up here and we change N to 36. We'll leave the interest rate alone. But the present value, well, we don't need a present value now. We need a future value. The future value that we're looking for, our target, is that 700... What was that, 730 what? 735, what? 491 or 391? 491. And 8 cents? 87. Okay, so now, is this an annuity due or an ordinary annuity? Look at the timeline. It's a due. You see it? Your first payment occurs at the beginning of your 23rd year of life. So again, this one will be an annuity due. This is, again, this is probably the hardest part of it, is figuring out whether it's a due or an ordinary, honestly. So if it's not clicking with you right away, it doesn't mean that there's a defect in you. Okay, so now, let's go up here and see what you have to put in the bank every year so that you can achieve this retirement goal. Alpha, solve. You got to put $10,150.61 away every year in order to achieve this. Now, financial planning, the real thing, all you do is you have the people tell you their goals through their life. Okay, we want a new car every 3 years. We want to have children in 7 years. We want to fund their educations. We plan to have 3 kids. We want to have a vacation home in Florida or in the Bahamas or whatever when we're 50 years old. And all you do is you set up the payment streams for each of their goals, and then you just put them together and say, you write me a check for this as a financial planner. You write me a check for this every year, and you will achieve these dreams, these goals of yours on target. So in other words, it's just column after column of the goals and the payments for each goal, and then just add them up. So what usually happens when you see this in practice, and if you do our financial planning minor or major here, you'll literally do this. It's like you'll see that the payments start out relatively minor, and then they get bigger and bigger as more and more of their goals come kick in to fund. And as their income goes up to fund those goals, and then towards the end, the payments become smaller and smaller into the fund that's paying for all of their goals. But it's actually, once you get the hang of it, it's all of them are just this in an Excel spreadsheet, goal by goal by goal. But again, you have to make sure that they understand that they have got to stay with the program. They can't blow it. Now I'm going to darken your horizon here and tell you about a crisis that we know is going to happen in 5 to 10 years. It's going to be your problem. If I'm lucky, I'll be dead, so you won't even be able to bitch at me about it. But we know it's going to happen. Now, it's already occurred, and they've made it look like, well, this was an isolated problem of irresponsibility. No, it is the same problem that has been going on in pension funds all over the United States and actually in Europe too. We know what's happening. We know why it's going to happen. And we can't get anyone to talk about it. It's one of those giant elephants in the room that we just politely ignore because it's not making too much of a mess right now. Here's what's going on. Many pension funds have what are called defined benefits. That right there, that's a defined benefit pension plan. There is a specific amount of money that you will be promised every year in your retirement. You see the defined benefit aspect of it? Defined benefit. Many pension plans function on a defined benefit basis. The problem, okay. Now, so they do this calculation right here. It is literally that for each person who is in the pension plan. And so they have this target amount of money. For everyone who participates in the pension plan, There's the target. Well, it wouldn't be that amount. It'd be whatever the defined benefit. 40,000, 60,000, 80% of the average of your last 5 years' paychecks. Whatever it is, the defined benefit says this is the amount that our pension plan for this person must have in the bank at the actuarial at the time of retirement and for the actuarial projection of the person's lifespan after retirement. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing big about that. Here's where the problem comes in. Pension plans have fiduciary responsibility to manage the money of the people contributing to them. In other words, that means that these pension funds cannot invest in risky things. They must invest in very safe instruments, typically bonds, municipals, things that are very safe. Things that are very safe have very low interest rates, low yields. So the calculations for the amount here, for the payments that would have to be made into it, the problem is this. They were calculating investments that they were going to invest the money at 8%. So look what payments would have to be made into it at 8%. $3,639. So they would collect that much money from you on an annual basis. The problem is that if you are investing in safe instruments, you ain't going to be able to find anything better than 3% even in good times. So what they should have been collecting was 3 times that from you every year. The fact that they were not doing that meant that they were, if they were actually investing at 3%, they were, what they have for you, underfunds your retirement by about a factor of 3.5. Which means that all these retirees coming up, you're going to have to pay the excess of the payments that they didn't make. Otherwise, you've got funds on the order of about $10 trillion that will not have the money to pay what they promised in defined benefits. That's where you stand in about 10 years. It'll be a crisis, and then they'll say, no one could have seen that coming. That's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.